The pandemic has hit communities hard, but I think an important highlight for me has been the project's ability to actually enhance the capacities of civil societies and provincial legislatures in addressing community needs. Also being able to influence the provincial legislature to conduct more and more of their work on virtual platforms. In as much as the pandemic has come about with so many challenges, it has also brought about a lot of opportunities in our context.
Welcome to the Conversation with Democracy podcast, where we uncover the successes and challenges of initiatives underway to build democracies in Africa. My name is Liz Letebele, and this podcast is brought to you by Democracy Works Foundation. Join us to find out about our work with our partners to build inclusive, equitable, and sustainable consensus democracy. In other words, democracies that work. This podcast series spotlights the work of the civil society participation in provincial legislatures project that seeks to build bridges between local civil society and provincial legislatures. Today, we speak to Democracy Works Foundation's project officer, Lesego More, who has been leading the engagements with organizations partnering with us on the Civil Society Participation in Provincial Legislature Project, or CSPPL for short. With a background in governance, policy development, and research, as well as his experienced student leadership development and training, he has been involved in CSPPL since early 2019. In this episode, Lesego More and Mira Dutschke, South Africa Program Manager at Democracy Works Foundation, explore some of the successes and challenges experienced throughout the project. And we take a closer look at some of the unlikely opportunities that the COVID-19 related lockdown provided in spearheading digital public participation.
Lesego, welcome to the podcast series, and thank you for being with us today. You have been working with the civil society partners in the Northwest, Limpopo, and the Northern Cape. Please tell us a bit about the organizations that you have been working with in these three provinces.
Thank you so much for having me, Mira. I must say it's been an exciting journey working with civil society in those three provinces. Basically, the organizations that I work with in those three provinces are mostly grassroots organizations that focus in the areas of health, public safety, and community development in general. What I learned working with these organizations is that a lot of their work involves delivering services to communities that government falls short in delivering, and being able to ensure that the basic needs of communities are met, most of which are also basic human rights, such as the right to healthcare, accessing healthcare, proper standards of healthcare, ensuring that people feel safe in their communities, victims of abuse have shelter, as well as from time to time ensuring that the poor and vulnerable people in our societies are able to eat and are able to get services from government. So it's been a mixture really of civil societies working in those three areas. The one thing that they have in common is that they work very closely with communities, and a lot of them are grassroots organizations.
So the second thing that I wanted to speak to you about was that this project deals specifically with trying to bridge the gap between civil society organizations and the provincial legislatures. Talk to us a bit about the rationale behind this approach.
South Africa has these great systems of governance that are supposed to have governance being citizen-driven, but in reality, there's a huge disconnect from institutions of power, from decision makers, and people who are in the communities who are agents of change. So this project actually aimed to try and close that gap, firstly by understanding what could be the reasons behind having this gap between grassroots communities and decision makers who are in the provincial legislatures, who are influential people in their party structures, and even in the provincial executive as well. So the project obviously allowed for us to come up with a body of research and findings that do give a better idea for work that might be similar to this in future as to why there are challenges, why challenges exist, but beyond the great research opportunity that it offered as well, it was able to empower community influencers, civil society organizations, and surprisingly, government actors as well, for them to have improved interactions among themselves, for them to better apply their systems, their strategies, with the hope of them obviously collectively governing and coming up with collective solutions for problems that society faces.
In trying to close the gap between government and civil society organizations and in implementing some of the actions that you have mentioned, how successful or how effective have civil society organizations actually been in engaging with the legislature?
I would say that we've recorded quite a number of successes in that in the beginning of our interaction with most of these societies, over a good 95% of them did not even know that there is such an institution as the provincial legislature, what their mandate are, what the institution exists for. And I can almost guarantee you that if you have a conversation with any of them today, they would be able to enlighten you, and not only enlighten you, but they are able to understand how the mandate of the institution can enhance their works, their work, and also make the life of communities a bit better. And beyond that as well, there's been amazing relationships built between government and community partners through obviously the work that of this project in the provinces where those relationships exist. I think we will see an improve in communication between communities and provincial legislatures. And most importantly, we will see service delivery and policy that is evidence-based on the needs of the community.
Democracy Works Foundation has been able to build particular strong relationships with the Northern Cape Provincial Legislature. Following a memorandum of agreement signed in late 2019, DWF and the Public Participation Unit have engaged in training workshops for members of the legislature, as well as legislature staff who have facilitated various engagements between civil society partners and the provincial legislature.
So what do you think have been some of the great successes that you experienced? Can you give us some practical examples?
It's been amazing, like I say, to see people whom in the beginning did not even have an idea that there is such an institution called a provincial legislature, having been invited on platforms of the provincial legislature, having spoken as authority in their respective fields. For example, in GBV, we've got some of our partner organizations who were even speaking on platforms of the provincial legislature, educating members of parliament about issues in that area, and even proposing potential partnerships on how they can collectively improve work in their provinces. And what I appreciate most is that the efforts have not been one-sided. On the other hand, I've also witnessed the provincial legislature very actively trying to strengthen this relationship, work with communities, improve in their oversight and community work. And I think the impact that this will have in the longer run is beyond what I can express at this moment.
The three main functions of parliaments and the provincial legislatures is to write laws, conduct oversight over the executive, and facilitate public participation in governance. A key process to get the public to participate is through the petitions process. Over the past 3 years, the CSPPL project has actively supported civil society organizations in submitting petitions to their provincial legislatures to raise service implementation challenges experienced by some of the most vulnerable members of our communities. The aim of the petitions process is to activate the oversight role which the legislature has over the executive. With a petition, the public can alert the legislature to service delivery issues which require attention and intervention. The legislature then has the constitutional mandate to hold the executive to account on the issues that have been raised.
One of the reflections that I can share is how excellently our community organizations, or how well rather, our community organizations have understood this process of petitions and how this can influence policy and oversight. An example of this would be in Limpopo, for example, where community members have for over time been struggling with the illegal trade of alcohol, where they wrote to the Limpopo provincial legislature requesting that the legislature exercises oversight in that area and use their powers and influence to take this up to the level of the NCOP, who would then make this a national policy priority by bringing it to the attention of the national parliament. So it shows how little an action might seem by community members who organize themselves through the provincial legislature. But should this find the right traction through the channels, it could even end up shifting national policy. And there are many other examples. In health, we've had community members, community organizations requesting for improved oversight, requesting for members of the legislature to come down to the clinics, to come down to the communities and actually also experience the challenges that they have. In one of the cases that our organizations took forward to the provincial legislature, it has been ongoing for years and years, I think dating back to 2007, where there has not been provision from government to build a school for special learning needs in Upington, you know, despite the fact that Upington has such high numbers of disabilities. But government has not been able to do that. And this project has also kept the conversation going. And even though by the time we record the end of this project, we might not have a school being built, but it's been an important process of applying pressure on government, having government going on with that conversation. And even in some instances, officials from the provincial government, from the local government, when they heard that our CSOs are interacting with provincial legislature, they responded so much more quicker to investigating these service delivery issues and even making some sort of commitment. So you will understand a bit better how much impact this petition process has had on service delivery day-to-day issues, but as well as channeling government decision-making and where they place priority.
You list some really impressive successes that have been experienced by civil society organizations as well as provincial legislatures. What are some of the challenges that we've experienced?
There have been challenges, and that I think are not just exclusive to this project, but that a lot of people who try and work with government experience, and which are the challenges of uncertainties. And in certain areas, you see that government was not certain whether to trust the initiative that came through this project, to trust civil society in general, and wanting to understand who the funders are, and wanting to also understand what the mandate and objective of the project is. An example of this would be the Northwest Province, where the project actually started with the most traction, but going towards elections as well, there was a lot of backtracking where government does not want to be found wanting. There's a lot of uncertainties. They don't want to find themselves in the wrong. They don't want anything to go out in the public eye that might compromise their legitimacy to contest elections. So they backtracked a bit, and after elections, that's when they had the security that they are still governing, that's when they wanted to come back to the project and open up. There's been Limpopo as well. A vast amount of research also speaks about, I do not want to say lack of willingness of the government and institutions to work with the public, but rather I want to say The lack of trust that government and their officials, translating institutions, have in letting in civil society and organizations that come in the name of strengthening. So those have been some of the challenges. I think the gatekeeping in institutions, which in my view have deprived the institution of great opportunities to strengthen the already good work that they are doing, but at the same time, of a good opportunity to deepen their relations in communities as well.
Thank you. For yourself, on a personal professional level, what have been some of the highlights for you?
I think some of the highlights, the greatest for me has been working with the civil society organizations, being there to see the shift, the transformation from where they were at the beginning of the province, being there to witness that despite all the challenges that happen, these people with little to no funding at all wake up each and every single day. They still have the will, you know, to build a better country. That pushed me. And even in the travel, I remember at times there were sessions that I'd have with them that would go over conventional hours of working. But to see their determination, their will, also pushes me to want to do more, you know, understanding the work that they do for close to nothing. And all in the name of creating better communities and better societies also pushed me and to push my limits and to do the best that I could for them, to empower them and to try and see changes in their communities. It's been a great experience working with these civil society partners, witnessing their transformation, how they've grew in the process, how they've gained skills that will help their organizations be able to resolve service delivery issues tomorrow, but also grow as organizations and their footprint in communities as well.
COVID-19 and the related lockdown affected everyone's lives, with those communities already living in poverty bearing the brunt. The work of CSO partners is no exception. The demand for the critical services they deliver increased dramatically, especially in the areas of health and supporting victims of gender-based violence. At the same time, severe limitations on travel and movement made it impossible to interact with partner organizations in the traditional way.
So then let's talk about COVID-19. How has COVID-19 affected the work of our civil society partners in the three provinces overall?
So COVID-19 came with a lot of uncertainties. I think it is important to start at that point. There are a lot of uncertainties, especially around the work that we had planned for the project, but we had to show resilience. We had to show innovation and having an understanding of the impact that our project has on these communities and on these civil society organizations. We had capacity building on WhatsApp, where we had ongoing training and advocacy coaching through a platform of WhatsApp where most of them have access to. You know, we did not just decide that because Democracy Works Foundation has access to Zoom on Teams, as a result, everyone else has that. But it showed an understanding of the stakeholders that we work with, a willingness for us to meet their needs.
In responding to the COVID-19 crisis, the project joined national calls for government institutions, in particular legislatures, to provide virtual access to allow the public to participate despite the lockdown. The project also partnered with the Northern Cape Provincial Legislature to engage with civil society organizations through virtual parliaments, topic-specific meetings, and online training events. In November 2020, the provincial legislature, for the first time in its existence, streamed a house sitting live on YouTube.
So please, can you share some of the innovative responses that civil society organizations and provincial legislatures have had to these challenges?
I think the most by highlight among the many innovative responses that I've witnessed is how a platform such as WhatsApp, that is traditionally meant to be a social platform, has been such a powerful tool to keep constant communication between communities, provincial legislatures, and organizations such as ourselves. For example, the Northern Cape, being the geographically biggest province in South Africa, you had someone who's 450 kilometers away from the legislature be able to interact on a very regular basis with the manager of public participation, where under ordinary circumstances, given the financial condition of these civil society partners, it would have almost been impossible to happen. The Democracy Works Foundation introducing social media as a powerful platform and giving our civil society organizations the confidence to actually use their social media a bit more effective to profile themselves, to do advocacy work on social media, to interact with the provincial legislature, and to also be the ones that can now pick up opportunities of participation and say that in the Northern Cape, this and that is happening. If you can join, please join. That has been amazing. And it is a step in the right direction, because broadly, when we speak about public participation in literature and in global trends, and the world is moving towards e-participation. So it's opening up an interesting avenue that I think Democracy Works Foundation has an opportunity to take that type of work forward in our provincial legislatures.
Thank you so much. That leads me perfectly into our last question, which is, you know, this project is coming to an end January 2021. Many of the relationships that we have hoped to that developed as a result of this project, we hope will remain, specifically the relationships between provincial legislatures, the public participation unit, and our CSO partners. For organization like Democracy Works, how do you think would one best build on the achievements that have been made over the last 3 years in this project?
We have seen the power of building the internal capacities of civil societies and assisting them to understand the governance processes that allow them access to their government, be it locally, provincially, or at an international level, we have seen that if you can give them this information, empower them with the necessary tools, they are able to interact, they are able to push for change. There is an opportunity for improved relations between government and citizens. And I think that's the one area where the Democracy Works Foundation can strive to continue building that knowledge of citizens, that capacity, technical capacity of citizens to be interactive citizens and not only to participate during intervals of elections. And on a second level as well, the Democracy Works Foundation really has an opportunity to push this idea of e-participation, considering the industrial revolution that we are perceived to be living under as well. The time is ripe for that kind of an idea, to ensure that in municipalities, in at provincial level, there is an appetite for people, and there is an appetite one, and also there is infrastructure for people to be able to engage with government on a virtual platform, be it on social media, be it on designated platform for this type of engagement, or my personal favorite, WhatsApp. But not only should that communication happen, but it should translate into action.
Yes, I completely agree with you. I think specifically there's a lot of power in the hybrid approach because, as you had mentioned, you know, not everyone has the infrastructure that they need to participate on digital platforms. And but there are very innovative ways that one can bridge that digital divide. And I think partnering with civil society organizations that have a certain infrastructure, but at the same time are very connected to with their constituencies and let them, you know, become an integral part of the participation process, I think is a very powerful tool.
The Civil Society Participation in Provincial Legislature Project was made possible with a co-funding and technical assistance from the European Union and the Westminster Foundation for Democracy. This is Liz Litabele signing out. Please follow our channel for more conversation with democracy and visit our website, www.democracyworksfoundation.org. Bye.